Matthew chapter 26. And it came to pass, when Jesus had finished all these sayings, he said to his disciples, "You know that after 2 days is the feast of the Passover, and the Son of Man will be betrayed to be crucified. Then the chief priests and the scribes and the elders of the people assembled together in the palace of the high priest, who is called Caiaphas, and consulted that they might take Jesus deceitfully and kill him." So they wanted to get rid of this guy. But they said, "Not on the feast day, lest there be an uproar among the people." So they wanted to get the timing just right, too. They wanted to destroy him, but they didn't want to cause an uproar of the people. Now, when Jesus was in Bethany in the house of Simon the leper, a woman came to him having an alabaster box of very precious ointment and poured it on his head as he sat at the table. But when his disciples saw it, they were indignant, saying, "To what purpose is this waste? For this ointment might have been sold for much and given to the poor." We'll see in another gospel account that it was mostly Judas complaining. And that's because Judas was a thief and a liar, and he was actually stealing money from Jesus and the other disciples. When Jesus understood it, he said to them, "Why do you trouble the woman? For she has worked a good work on me." Uh-oh, that word work again. That's okay. "For you always have the poor with you, but you do not always have me. For in that day she has poured this ointment on my body, she did it for my burial. Truly I say to you, wherever this gospel shall be preached in the whole world, what this woman has done there shall also be told as a memorial of her." And I think that's pretty cool, because here we are almost 2,000 years later, and we just read her story about what she did. "Then one of the 12, called Judas Iscariot," oh, we all know him, "went to the chief priests and said to them, 'What will you give me, and I will deliver him to you?' And they covenanted with him for 30 pieces of silver, and from that time he sought opportunity to betray him." You know, another point that I just realized, you know how I'm constantly saying, well, this passage just blows once saved, always saved out of the water. This is another example. Judas was one of Jesus' apostles. He was saved. He was obedient. And look what happened to him. He didn't stay saved, did he? He didn't, because he chose to be a thief and a liar and betray Jesus, and then he went and killed himself. We'll see here in a little bit. So once saved, always saved. That is like the worst, one of the worst false doctrines I have ever heard. And it is so opposite of what the Bible teaches on just about every page. "Now on the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the disciples came to Jesus, saying to him, 'Where do you want us to prepare for you to eat the Passover?' And he said, 'Go into the city to such a man and say to him, The master says, My time is at hand. I will keep the Passover at your house with my disciples.' And the disciples did as Jesus had appointed them, and they made ready the Passover." I'm wanting to do a study of trying to figure out the exact timeline. You know, because you've got the Passover, you have the Feast of Unleavened Bread, then you've got chief priests and elders and Pharisees all saying, well, we don't want to kill him on the feast day. We've got passages that say Jesus was dead and buried and resurrected for 3 days and three nights. I'm trying to get all of that figured out, because they saw time differently than we did. I know, like, the Jewish time, the easiest way for me to figure it out is just, you know, take our clock and turn it upside down so that the 6 is at the 12 mark, and that kind of helps me figure out the times. But I'm also trying to figure out all the days of the week and everything. But I didn't want to not do this recording, because I'm going to do that study, and that study is going to take me some time. So I'm going to try to figure all that out. Okay, and the disciples did as Jesus had appointed them, and they made ready the Passover. Now when evening had come, he sat down with the 12, and as they ate, he said, "Truly I say to you that one of you shall betray me." And they were exceedingly sorrowful, and every one of them began to say to him, "Lord, is it I?" And he answered and said, "He who dips his hand with me in the dish, the same shall betray me. The Son of Man goes, as it is written of him," and he's referring to Psalm 41:9, "but woe to that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed." In other words, this is all according to Scripture. This is all going exactly as it's been prophesied. But woe to that man who is doing the betraying. It would have been good for that man if he had not been born. Let's just look at Psalm 41:9 real quick, because that's what he's referring to when he says it has to be as it is written. 41 verse 9. "Yes, my own familiar friend in whom I trusted, who ate of my bread, has lifted up his heel against me." So that's talking about Judas there. How do I know that? Because Jesus just said that. "Then Judas, who betrayed him, answered and said, 'Master, is it I?' He said to him, 'You have said it.'" So, yep, it's you, Judas. "And as they were eating," and see, at this point, Judas still had free will. Jesus and God never take away people's free will. Judas did all of this with his own free will. "And as they were eating, Jesus took bread and blessed it and broke it and gave it to the disciples and said, 'Take, eat, this is my body.'" So this is Jesus at the Passover with his disciples, and he is instituting what we know as the Lord's Supper. "So he took bread, he blessed it, broke it, gave it to the disciples and said, 'Take, eat, this is my body.'" Of course, not literally. This represents my body that I'm going to sacrifice on the cross. "And he took the cup," and we know that the cup contained grape juice or fruit of the vine, "gave thanks and gave it to them, saying, 'Drink it, all of you, for this is my blood of the new covenant, which is shed for many for the remission of sins.'" And let's just look at Hebrews 9:22 real quick, which says, "And by the law, almost all things are purified with blood, and without the shedding of blood, there is no remission." So the only way we can get our sins forgiven is by the fact that Christ died on the cross and shed his blood for us. And when we get to Acts 2, we'll see exactly how we today, as Christians, how we get that remission of sins, how they got it in the first century, and how we still get it today. "But I say to you, I will not drink of this fruit of the vine from now on until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom." And when they had sung a hymn, they went out to the Mount of Olives. Then Jesus said to them, "All of you shall be made to stumble because of me this night, for it is written, 'I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock shall be scattered abroad.'" He's quoting from Zechariah 13:7. He's basically telling his disciples, "Tonight, all of you are going to deny me. You are all going to run off and leave me by myself. But after I've risen again, I will go before you into Galilee." And he's going to tell them, you know, "Meet me there." "Peter answered and said to him, 'Though all men shall be made to stumble because of you, yet I will never be made to stumble.'" Oh, Peter, you can always rely on him to pipe up, huh? He's always the first one to speak up. "Jesus said to him, 'Truly I say to you, this night, before the rooster crows, Peter, you shall deny me three times.' Peter said to him, 'Though I should die with you, still I will not deny you.'" "All the disciples also said likewise." Well, I'm sure at the time Peter said it, he meant it. But we'll see here in a couple minutes that that's not what happened. "Then Jesus came with them to a place called Gethsemane and said to the disciples, 'Sit here while I go and pray over there.'" So he knew his time was coming. He knew Jesus had already made a deal. He knew that that night they were coming for him. And being that he was a human being, he had all of the same fears and anxieties and dread that we would have in that situation. He wanted to go pray to his father, and he took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee and began to be sorrowful and very heavy. Now, the two sons of Zebedee would be James and John. So Peter, James, and John. And began to be sorrowful and very heavy. So he's in Gethsemane praying to his father. And Peter, James, and John are nearby. I don't think they can hear Jesus, but they're nearby. Then he said to them, "My soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even to death. Remain here and watch with me." And he went a little further and fell on his face and prayed, saying, "Oh, my Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will." He's begging his Father, "If there is any other way to do this, let's do that, because I really don't want to go through this. But not my will, but thine be done." And he came to his disciples and found them asleep and said to Peter, "What, could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray that you do not enter into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak." So Jesus, as always, took a little teaching opportunity there. They had fallen asleep. I'm sure they were very tired. And Jesus said, always be prepared. Always be watchful. Because temptations will always come. You've got to always be on alert. He went away again the second time and prayed, saying, "Oh, my Father, if this cup may not pass away from me unless I drink it, your will be done." He goes back to his father, begs him again, if there's any other way to do this. I mean, nobody wants to be crucified. He was arrested illegally. It was an illegal trial. He was beaten. He was spit on, called names, scourged, crucified. I mean, just absolute pain and humiliation. I can't even imagine. And he came and found them asleep again, for their eyes were heavy. And he left them and went away again and prayed the third time, saying the same words. He asked God 3 times, "If there's any other way to do this, let's do it. But if not, your will be done." Then he came to his disciples and said to them, "Sleep on now and take your rest. Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going. Behold, he who betrays me is at hand." So he knew it was about to happen. And God did not change his plan. I mean, he had this plan from the very beginning. And I'm sure God was grieving too. He didn't want his son to have to go through this, but it's to save mankind. And while he yet spoke, behold, Judas, one of the 12, came, and with him a great multitude with swords and clubs from the chief priests and elders of the people. Now, how ridiculous is that? Jesus was never violent. He's not a criminal. And yet they're coming. A whole bunch of them are coming with swords and clubs, as if they're going to catch and have to chase down and capture an extremely dangerous, violent criminal. Now he who betrayed him, Judas, gave them a sign, saying, "Whomever I kiss, that same is he. Hold him fast." And immediately he came to Jesus and said, "Hail, Master," and kissed him. Wow, the kiss of betrayal. And Jesus said to him, "Friend, why have you come?" Then they came and laid hands on Jesus and took him. And behold, one of those who was with Jesus, and we know from another account that it's Peter, of course, stretched out his hand, drew his sword, and struck a servant of the high priest and cut off his ear. So Peter was ready to fight. Then Jesus said to him, "Put up your sword into its place again, for all those who take the sword shall perish with the sword." Heard that saying a lot, you know, live by the sword, die by the sword. "Do you think that I cannot now pray to my Father, and he shall presently give me more than 12 legions of angels?" like 12,000 angels could come and save me right now, but that's not the plan. But how then shall the scriptures be fulfilled that it must happen this way? In that same hour, Jesus said to the multitudes, "Have you come out as against a thief with swords and clubs to take me? Daily I sat with you teaching in the temple, and you took no hold of me. But this was all done that the scriptures of the prophets might be fulfilled." Then all the disciples forsook him and fled. So this has been planned. This has been planned since the beginning of time. And Jesus was allowing this to happen to him. Absolutely allowing this to happen to him. Because he knew how important this was. And of course, all the disciples, including Peter, ran off. Got scared, ran off. And those who had taken hold of Jesus led him away to Caiaphas the high priest, where the scribes and the elders were assembled. But Peter followed him afar off to the high priest's palace and went in and sat with the servants to see the end. So Peter was following a safe distance behind. He wanted to see what was going to happen. But he was too scared to stand by Jesus' side like he was just so determined he was going to do earlier. Now the chief priests and elders and all the council sought false witness against Jesus to put him to death. So he needs that they need somebody to lie and say, "Oh, Jesus did this and this and this," and then they will have a perfect excuse to execute him then. Well, they couldn't find any, but found none. Yes, though many false witnesses came, yet they found none. At the last came two false witnesses. So finally they were able to find two liars and said, "This fellow said, 'I am able to destroy the temple of God and to build it in 3 days.'" Well, that's not exactly the truth. Jesus certainly was, when he said that, he was not talking about the physical temple of Jerusalem. He was talking about his body, that it would be destroyed and then resurrected in 3 days. But who cares? You know, loopholes, half-truths, taking things out of context, whatever it takes to get this guy killed, that's fine. Very like politics today. And the high priest arose and said to him, "Do you answer nothing? What is it that these men testify against you?" But Jesus remained silent. Now, Jesus could have explained, "Oh, I didn't mean I'm physically going to tear down the temple and rebuild it in 3 days. I was talking about myself." No, because Jesus is allowing this to happen. The scriptures have to be fulfilled. And the high priest answered and said to him, "I adjure you by the living God that you tell us whether you are the Christ, the Son of God." Jesus said to him, "You have said it. Nevertheless, I say to you, hereafter, you shall see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of power and coming in the clouds of heaven." Now, I don't know whether he's talking about, because we know that he ascends after he resurrects and spends like 40 days or something. He ascends back up into heaven and is sitting on the right hand of God. And then when he comes again, he's going to be coming in the clouds of heaven. I'm assuming that's what he's referring to. Then the high priest tore his clothes, saying, "He has spoken blasphemy. What further need do we have of witnesses? Behold, now you heard his blasphemy. What do you think?" Oh, he just claimed to be the Son of God. Pew! We can kill him now. We can kill him now. He's not the Son of God. Okay, but he is. They answered and said, "He is guilty of death." Then they spit in his face and beat him, and others struck him with the palms of their hands, basically slapping him around, saying, "Prophesy to us, Christ. Who is he who struck you?" Now Peter sat outside in the palace, and a young woman came to him, saying, "You also were with Jesus of Galilee." But he denied before them all, saying, "I do not know what you are saying." Up, oh, deny number one. And when he had gone out into the porch, another maid saw him and said to those who were there, "This fellow is also with Jesus of Nazareth." And he denied with an oath, "I do not know the man." Just blatant lie and denial. And after a while, those who stood by came to him and said to Peter, "Surely you also are one of them, for your speech betrays you." Then he began to curse and swear, saying, "I do not know the man." And immediately the rooster crowed. Exactly like Jesus said was going to happen. And Peter remembered the word of Jesus, who said to him, "Before the rooster crows, you shall deny me 3 times." And he went out and wept bitterly. Peter had godly sorrow. He repented and he wept bitterly. He had godly sorrow. We'll see right at the beginning of the next chapter, Judas, who instead of having godly sorrow and repenting and making his life right again with God, he only had worldly sorrow and he ended up killing himself. But we'll see that. There's another passage that every time I read it gives me the chills. I can't remember which gospel account. But it said, as soon as Peter had denied Jesus 3 times and the rooster crowed, Jesus looked over at him and just looked at him. And that just gives me the chills every time. I just can't imagine how Peter must have felt. Just having Jesus look at you and knowing that you had just swore up and down that you did not know him. Peter must have just been devastated when he realized what he had done. And that is chapter 26.